What is this place? I murmur. Children's Cancer Ward. I stop dead then, right in the middle of the corridor. You have cancer? Really? Harry turns back to me, his forehead wrinkling a bit. Well, I'm not in here for fun. He watches me carefully. Acute lymphoblastic leukemia. Mad, eh? He pulls a face. But I don't laugh like I think he wants me to. I'm too confused. I try to keep from staring at his hair. It looks so thick. He doesn't look like he has cancer. Are you sure? He squawks out a laugh.
I think 3 years of treatment's pretty sure. But right now I'm in remission, which means the cancer's gone away for a while, so they're only topping me up with chemo when I need it, to keep it that way.
He catches my gaze.
My hair's hanging in there, just. In a few days' time, though, it might be a different story.
But you don't even look sick, I say. Not today, anyway.
That's because I've got someone else's blood in me.
His eyes twinkle as they register my confusion. He leans towards me to whisper,
blood transfusion, not vampire, in case you were wondering.
I smile a little then. He's so confident. He's acting like it's the most natural thing in the world that he has cancer. But he must be pretty sick. Maybe even as sick as Dad. It almost doesn't seem fair that he looks so much healthier. I don't meet his gaze. Glance round the corridor instead. In a room opposite us, there's a girl looking at me from a bed. She looks exhausted, barely awake. Suddenly, I feel as if I'm intruding. Am I even allowed in here? I ask. It feels kind of weird.
You're with me. It's fine.
I don't even know you. Not really.
Does it matter? I don't know any of the other kids in here either.
He starts walking again.
Besides, it's a peds ward, so there's no visiting hours.
Peds ward?
For young people.
He rolls his eyes.
Yeah, they think we get lonely, so it's always open house. Anyway...
He stops beside an open door. I look into the room. There are two beds inside, but only one looks like it's been slept in. The walls are lime green, and there's a big flat-screen TV. It looks about as different from Dad's room as possible.
I'm the oldest one here,
Harry explains,
so I don't have to share with anyone, not if I don't want to.
This is your room?
For the moment. If someone has to go into isolation, I might have to move.
I think he wants me to go in, but I hesitate. I mean, it's kind of his bedroom after all. How long have you been here? He thinks.
On and off for the past 3 weeks. I was getting treatment at home before that, but Mum kind of needs to go back to work, so they brought me in.
He walks ahead of me into his room.
Come see my view, he says.
His window stretches across the whole of the wall. It's so much bigger than the window in Dad's ward. It lets in loads more light. He walks over to it. The sunlight turns his skin pale as a ghost. He beckons me in.
Don't worry, you can't catch it from me.
I look away from his grin and to the window. I can see a lake, surrounded by trees, and I start forward before I realise. My eyes scan across the water, checking to see if the whoopers have gone there.
I've been watching this lake for ages, Harry says. I almost told you yesterday when you said about the Harry Bramblings. Reckon there's any down there?
I cringe, wait for the teasing. But Harry keeps quiet, genuinely interested. Maybe, I say quietly. It's a bit early for them yet. His face falls.
So what do these Bramblings look like?
They're kind of small. Orangey.
Kind of like me, then.
I look at him. A little. You'd never see one from up here, though. I think he's about to say something else about Bramblings, so I turn back to study the lake. There's a clump of ducks in one corner, and something else darting in and out of the reeds along the edge. We're too far away to see properly. Then I see something. Just one. I can't work out whether it's a whooper or a mute from here, but it's definitely a swan. Its feathers look greyish and young. My breath catches in my throat as I think about that lone grey whooper flying away from the power cables that day, all on her own. Perhaps it's her.
What is it?
Harry asks. Just a swan. Maybe a whooper. Maybe part of the flock we've been chasing.
Chasing?
I turn to Harry to explain how Dad and I always follow the whooper flock, how they weren't on their normal reserve because of the new power lines. It's what Dad and I were watching when he had his heart attack thing, I say. Harry's mouth turns down at the corners.
I didn't mean to bring up your dad, he says, or what happened.
It's okay. I turn back to the window and try harder to work out if it's a whooper. Dad will cheer up once I tell him there's a swan here. Honest.
Really?
Yeah. I smile. He's kind of obsessed with them. Chapter 17 Harry takes me down to where the cafe is.
You'll be okay with your mum, yeah?
He asks in the lift. I look at him carefully, wonder why he's so concerned. You can meet her if you like, I say.
Nah.
Harry shakes his head, looking suddenly embarrassed. He gets out of the lift and points to where I can already see the cafe in the entrance hall. Mum and Jack are sitting at a table to the side. Mum looks up and sees me. I wave, feeling a little guilty that I'm late.
See you around, Harry says. Remember, it's an open access ward, so you can visit whenever.
I'll try. Mum pushes a paper cup of hot chocolate into my hands. It's lukewarm.
We thought you'd got lost, she says.
Sorry, I kind of did. I press my face into Mum's neck in a sort of hug. Jack's frowning when I look at him.
Who was that?
He asks. He looks back to the lifts to where Harry must have disappeared. I shrug. Just a guy I met in the corridors. He's called Harry. Mum laughs a little, though I think she's more puzzled than happy.
Only you can make friends in a hospital, babe. Can you drink that on the go?
I nod, trail behind her with the cup in my hand. We're silent in the car. Mum's really tired, and I think Jack's shocked by how Dad looks. What happens next? I say quietly. Mum looks at me in the rearview mirror. She knows instantly what I mean.
They're going to do some tests, see what the problem really is. He might have to have an operation later in the week, but he's stable for now. You don't need to worry.
But her words don't sound certain enough. When we get back to the house, Jack gets his football from the garage.
I'm going to the park,
he calls back to Mum. Can I come? I say quickly. I don't want to go in the house yet. Don't want to sit with Mum and not know what to say about Dad. I'd rather be with people, anyone, even if they are Jack's friends. If Saskia were here, I'd go to her house. Jack hesitates, scrunches up his face as he thinks. It's obvious he doesn't want me there, but he nods anyway. Don't know why. Perhaps he feels sorry for me. He kicks his football down the street, bouncing it off telegraph poles and small front walls. I hang back a few metres. There are four of Jack's mates waiting on the play equipment. Dino, Jez, Rav and Crowy. I know them all. They're sprawled on top of the wooden castle structure, legs hanging down over the climbing wall. I glance quickly at Crowy, but of course he's not looking at me. He's got his head down, drawing something with a marker pen on top of the slide. His long hair falls down across his face. I force my eyes away before he looks up and finds me staring. There are a couple of girls from Jack's year there, perched on the swings. Jack glances over at me when he sees them, and I know what that look means. Don't be an idiot, Isla. Don't show me up in front of everyone. I smile at them all. One of the girls does this little half wave at me. I recognise her from when I was in the athletics team in the summer. I think her name is Jess. I'm about to ask her, when Dino and Jez call down hi to me. They're friendlier than usual. Perhaps Jack's already told them about Dad, how I was the one who had to call the ambulance. I look back at Crowy, but I don't think he's even noticed I'm here yet. I drape myself against the edge of the swing structure.
It's hard to look like I fit in when I know they all think of me as Jack's little sister. So I just watch Jack smack the ball against the climbing wall. The ball bounces off the fake rocks that are stuck there and comes back to Jack at awkward angles. Jack lifts his knee and stops it easily. He's so good at controlling the ball, at moving it into the places he wants it to go. So much better than me. Jess, the girl who half-waved, tries talking to me, starts asking about my weekend, and I wonder whether she knows about Dad too. I tell her briefly, skim over what happened. She nods politely and pulls her features into an expression that almost looks sympathetic. Maybe she's just trying to impress my brother. I don't know. Either way, I feel really awkward talking about this with her. She's making all these soothing noises like she really cares. When the conversation dries up, I look down at where my shoes are scuffing into the wood chips. I want to ask her about her weekend, but it feels really stupid now after what I've just said about mine. The boys jump down from the castle to play footy, and there's this awkward moment where I don't know whether to go with them or to keep hanging with the girls. But Chloe stops and looks back at the swings.
"We need to make our teams even," he says.
I think he's talking to all of us, but for a second, it feels like he's just talking to me. He flashes a grin then, one of those perfect ones where his teeth seem so white and straight. And then he really does look at me.
"You're a good player,"
he says, raising his eyebrows. The other girl on the swing giggles as Chloe jogs away. I hear her start to mumble something as I follow him. I turn around to them. "I'm sure you could both play too," I say. "The boys won't mind." The girls just smile and shrug. "Maybe later," Jess says. They're not really dressed for football. I can see that now. Think it's probably the last thing they had in mind. The boys mark goals with their jumpers. I play on Jack and Chloe's team. I'm glad about that. Glad Jack's let me play with him. Glad Chloe has too. I glance around at the others. No one seems annoyed that I'm here. No one even cares. They just want to get on with the game.
"If you get the ball, just run it down," Jack says to me quietly. "Then pass it back to me. Don't try and shoot."
He knows as well as I do what I'm good at. I breathe out slowly, stretch out the muscles in my legs. My body's tingling to run, desperate to stop thinking about Dad. Jack kicks the ball deep into the other half to start the game. Dino's onto it immediately, but Chloe slides in and tackles him. He's really good, maybe even better than Jack. I keep out of the action for a while, watching the way the exchange passes. They keep pace with each other, running down the pitch. They seem to always know where the other one's going to be. It reminds me of how the swans fly, that silent communication and support, that perfect formation. I watch Chloe sidestep around Dino and then Rav, twisting with the ball, then flick it across to Jack. He makes it look so effortless. Jack stops for a moment to push hair from his eyes. He sees me and hesitates. I'm in a good position, and Jez is right there about to tackle him. He doesn't have much choice. He holds my gaze as he kicks the ball cross-field towards me. I stop it with a soft thud, control it. It's my big moment, my chance to prove myself. But already Dino's running towards me. I have to be quick. I head out towards the wing and really run. It's clear up ahead. Everyone else is still back near Jack. I don't think they were expecting him to kick it out to me. I focus on getting to the makeshift goal, focus on knocking the ball ahead of me. I stretch out my legs. It feels good. It feels so good to be running so fast, to have everyone else behind me. From the corner of my eye, I see Dino trying to catch me. Jack's running hard too, speeding down the other side of the pitch, not wanting me to get to the goal before he does. Even he can't catch me, and he's fast, usually faster than me. But not today. When I get to the goal, there's still no one anywhere near me, so I just run it straight in. I'm too worried I'm going to miss it if I kick it. I grin as I do, shake my fist.
I've just scored my first goal in front of my brother's mates. It feels amazing. I look back at them, find Crowy's face. He's grinning too, holding his hands up above his head and clapping. Then suddenly, Dino and Jack have caught up with me. They're panting hard and both are glaring. I can understand why Dino's mad, but Jack... He jogs up to me, pulls his T-shirt up to wipe his face.
I said I'd get the goals, he growls.
He leans over, placing his hands on his knees to catch his breath. But I feel great, as if I could keep running for days. I walk over to him, poke him in the ribs. Aren't you glad I did? I say, smirking at him. I start laughing. It starts as a small giggle, but then I can't control myself. I have to sit down on the grass, I'm laughing so much. I press my hands to the damp ground and try to hold it in, but that just makes me snort. Jack looks down at me. He's still glaring at first, wanting me to shut up. But then even he starts smiling. He can't help it.
You're a loon, he mutters.
But I'm a fast loon. I'm still laughing so hard I can hardly get the words out.
All right, I'll give you that.
Jack straightens up then, sticks his hand down for me to grab. He pulls me back up to my feet.
Come on then, loon. The game's not over just because you score one goal.
When I run back to position, I'm bouncing from foot to foot, eager to do it all again. I look across and see Crowy laughing at me. And then I realise I haven't thought about Dad for ages. I've been having too much fun. It makes me feel guilty straight away. Chapter 18. All the way to school, I try to convince Mum to let me stay with her. I just want to be with Dad, I say. We're not learning anything at school now anyway, just gearing up to Christmas. And it's true, we're not doing much, and I do want to be with Dad. But it's more than that. The thought of going back to school now, after this weekend, without Saskia, and with everything that's happened, just seems unbearable. Mum relents in the end.
Okay, I'll ask school if you can miss a day.
She catches my grin by looking in the rearview mirror.
But don't think you can make it a habit.
Don't know why I can't miss school too,
Jack grumbles.
Exams, that's why.
Mum pulls into the teacher's car park and keeps the car running.
I won't be long.
She jogs into the office. I glance around at the rest of the car park and hope that none of my teachers arrive while I'm here. Jack walks slowly to the school gates and Crowy comes out to meet him. I swallow quickly and almost wish I'd walked in with Jack. I watch as Crowy chucks his arm around Jack's shoulder and leans in to whisper something to him. I imagine what it might feel like to have his breath on my ear. Then he starts laughing. I stare at his hair, which is way past the regulation collar length, and remember the way he grinned at me yesterday. He doesn't look across for me this time. Mum comes out of the office with her thumbs raised.
Piece of cake,
she says as she gets into the car. She turns around to me before she drives off.
The lady said you can have as much time off as you need.
I clamber over the gear stick to get into the front seat. I stick my feet up onto the dashboard and watch the city shoot past. Even though I know it's going to be hard to visit Dad, it still feels like I'm escaping. Without Saskia there, school's worse than ever. As Mum drives faster, my eyes follow the edges of the clouds. I imagine I'm a bird flying up there, keeping pace with the car. I'm looking for the whoopers, really. Trying to catch a glimpse of them so I can tell Dad. Chapter 19. Dad looks a little better than yesterday. Somehow his skin is less grey. But he still looks so weak, as if he's 100 years older than he was. I stand behind Mum. I don't know how loudly I should talk to Dad. Maybe I shouldn't talk at all. It feels like if I was to shout at him, he'd fade away completely. But I want to tell him about how I played football yesterday. Dad used to be an amazing football player, even better than Jack. I jiggle my legs as I remember how I raced down the wing and ran the ball into the goal. Then I imagine that Crowy's there, watching me, and I'm lining up another goal, bringing my leg back to shoot, aiming and... Ow! I blink. Mum's rubbing her shin. I've kicked her leg by mistake. "What'd you do that for?" she asks, glaring at me. I look across at Dad, who's staring at me too. "I scored a goal yesterday," I blurt out, "when Jack let me play." Dad looks so pleased that his eyes almost seem to become brighter for a moment. I'm glad I've told him, but Mum folds her arms across her chest.
"Did you have to score it again on my leg?"
she mutters. I lean down and rub her shin. "Sorry, got carried away." But Mum doesn't really mind. She pushes me to the head of Dad's bed so that I can talk to him more. I notice the way Dad's starting to smile. He's more with it today. He can finish sentences. Perhaps he is getting better after all. Perhaps I'll just do these tests, then let him out in a day or two. I lean up closer to him, ready to tell him the news that I know will make him smile. "You were right when you said there was a lake behind the hospital," I say. "And there's a swan on it too. Maybe a whooper." Dad's eyes light up properly then, just as I'd imagined.
"Why didn't you say?"
"Only saw it yesterday."
"Is the rest of the flock there?"
I shake my head. "Just one." I walk over to the window. It's near Dad's bed, but it's probably too high up for him to see out of properly. I look out for him instead. I only see the car park and the ring road, and beyond that, fields. "Your window's facing the wrong way," I tell him. "You need to go to one on the other side to see the swan." I glance at Mum, but she's shaking her head.
"No chance, babe. Dad's got to stay here."
"Can't we even take him in a wheelchair, just for a look?"
"Nope, he's too ill."
I come back to Dad. His smile has fallen a little now.
"You'll have to look for me,"
he says in his thin, raspy voice.
"Keep a watch for the others, too."
I glance across at Mum, but she just rolls her eyes as if to say, "You know what he's like." She reaches forward to grab Dad's hand.
"If it will keep your spirits up,"
she murmurs, obviously just trying to please him. I swear Dad's cheeks are pinker now that he's interested in something. And then, suddenly, I know what I'm going to do. I know exactly what I can do to keep Dad's spirits up. I'll watch the swans, like he says. "I'll meet you in the cafe in an hour," I tell Mum. Chapter 20. I stick to the edge, following the fence around the car park. I can't find a proper entrance, but there is a shed that seems to sag at the corners, and there is a slit in the fence in front of it. It runs vertically from where my shoulder is to the base. I lean against the splintery wood of the shed and pull back the wire, testing it. It bends back easily, as if it has been bent like this before. I curl it towards me like a wave, opening up the split. Then I kick at it, pushing it back further. I ignore the sign. "Keep out, authorized persons only." Take a breath, then bend my body through. I take a few steps. It doesn't look the same down here as it did through Harry's window. There are plastic bags half submerged in the mud around my feet, crushed beer cans, and hundreds of cigarette butts. I step across a faded washing powder box. I almost turn back. It's obvious I'm not supposed to be here. I don't know what those authorized persons would do if they found me. I'm not the first person to have done this, though. I can tell that by the way the ground has been trampled into a path that leads to a patch of trees. The memory of Dad's face keeps me going. He looked different when I mentioned the swan, excited almost. And Mum said that anything that lifted Dad's spirits was good for him. I try to convince myself that I'm doing the right thing. I step across the manky brown carpet of dead leaves. At the patch of trees, I find another sign, propped up against a trunk. "Hospital patrons only. Please keep to the track. The path feels firmer now, as if it used to be a proper trackway. I walk on, going deeper into the trees. It gets darker the further I go in. Everything's so silent. There are no machines whirring on and off, no trolleys trundling past, no patients crying out. I can only hear the wind whispering leaves and bits of rubbish about. It smells better than in the hospital too, like damp leaves and mud. I wish I could bottle it and take it back for Dad. I step over another crashed beer can and look ahead to where it's getting lighter. There's a gap beyond the trees. If Dad were here with me, he'd walk confidently, blabbing on about how alive it makes a person feel to be out in nature. He'd be stopping to look at beetles in the leaf litter and touching the trees. He wouldn't be scared at all. There's a real ache in my chest as I think about it. I want Dad here with me. It's not fair that he isn't. But I've got my phone in my pocket. I'll just go up to the lake, take a photo of the swan, have a good look around for any others, and then leave. I won't hang about. I hear a crack to my left. The bushes shake. A dark patch of brambles moves violently from side to side. I freeze. Then the movement stops. I stare at the leaves, waiting. A drop of frosty water lands on my head and then slides down my cheek. Something small and black shoots out of the bushes. I trip backwards over a tree root and almost fall. But it's only a bird, a stupid coot with a smug white face. I'm such a bag of nerves. I get to the lake. The swan is still there. She's not far away, floating on her own. I look across the water and at the land around the edges. There aren't any others. She's smaller and more grey than most, but she's definitely a whooper. Her beak is long and yellow, like all whoopers, but has traces of pink. I don't think she's even a year old. It's weird, but there's something almost familiar about her. I'm sure she's the same bird we saw at the reserve that day, looping above us. I'm sure I found her. That's already enough to tell Dad. I go to the edge of the water towards her. She doesn't move, but she seems to be watching me, her small black eyes fixed on mine. She's a beautiful swan, with clean feathers and a long, straight neck. I take my phone out of my pocket and take a photo. She doesn't bob her head away. She doesn't look scared of me at all. I crouch down and keep watching. Near my feet are some of her chest feathers, a babyish dark grey colour. They are soft and damp, a little like fur. I take the two longest ones and run my forefinger and thumb over them, making them smooth and perfect. I put them in my pocket with my phone. I'll take them for Dad. When I look up again, she's there. I mean, right there, in front of my face there, less than a metre away. I don't know how she swam up to me so quickly, or how I didn't notice. Her eyes are still locked on my face. Birds aren't supposed to have expressions, but this one seems to. She seems really curious. It's almost human the way she's looking at me. It's like she's asked me a question, and now she's waiting for my response. I glance away, and then back at her, just to check I'm not imagining it. But she's still looking at me like that. I start shuffling backwards up the bank. I move slowly and steadily so she doesn't get alarmed. Even though I'm not scared of swans, I know they're pretty powerful. I mean, everyone's heard stories about swans breaking people's arms with their wings. Grandad told me once that a swan is capable of drowning a dog. "Why are you so brave?" I murmur to her. She tilts her head as if she's listening. She comes closer. Her feet squelch in the mud as she steps onto the bank. I could reach out and touch her. She stretches her wings out, and for a moment she's absolutely massive, towering above me. Her wings block the light. I scrabble to stand. She beats her wings and a stench of stale water hits my nostrils. Already her beak is stretching towards me and her wings are against my shins. "Shoo," I say, "I don't have any food." I turn quickly and jog away from her. I'm not frightened exactly, but there's something odd about this bird. Wild swans should be timid, scared of humans. This one's different. I think I'll stop after a few strides, but I don't. I increase my pace. She won't follow me across land, I know, but it feels good to run. It reminds me of playing football with Jack and of all the training runs we did in athletics last summer. I glance back to see the swan returning to the water. She's fine now, no longer angry, or whatever it was that made her come up to me like that. I watch her swim away. Maybe she's lonely. I run instead of thinking too hard. I want it to be like Jack's football game when I ran and forgot all the bad stuff. My breathing starts to get heavier, and I feel my shoulders drop as I ease into the pace. Then I hear short, sharp smacks on the water, and I turn my head. It's the swan. She's beating her wings, running on the surface of the lake. At first I think she's following me. Then I realise. She's trying to take off, trying to get the speed she needs from running across the water. I keep moving. I think she's going to lift off at any moment, and I wait for her to soar low over my head. But she doesn't. She keeps running across the surface. I see the muscles straining in her neck. As she starts to catch up with me, I feel the sweep of wind coming from her feathers. It's almost as though she's racing me. Then I see her eyes. She's still watching me. I stumble, look across at the trees. There's no one else here. Only me. I stare back at her. I even start to run a little towards her. For a moment, it's as if she's drawing me there. I'm gasping for breath, sucking the cold wind down into my lungs. Her feet smack harder on the surface of the lake, and she inches ahead. It's almost as if she's urging me to go faster as well. It's ridiculous. Swans don't race each other like this, and they definitely don't race humans. I hear the breath rasping in my throat, the strain in my ribs. I slow down. I have to. The swan watches me, falters for a moment. I wave my arms at her, try to scare her into taking off. Instead, spray splashes from her feet as she lowers her body back into the water and refolds her wings. Instantly she's calm, as if she were never running to take off in the first place. I collapse onto my hands and knees and gasp for air. My body's hot, my school shirt stuck to my back. I turn my head sideways to the lake. I take a breath, as long as I can make it, then another. I see her now, floating further away. Why did she follow me like that? Why didn't she just fly? If Dad were here, he'd probably be able to explain it. Perhaps racing humans around a lake is some strange swan behaviour thing I've never heard of. Perhaps it's what swans do when they're stressed. I don't know. I wait until the breath stops rattling in my throat before I sit up properly. I watch the swan float further away. She's so uninterested now. I stand up, shakily. I glance back at the track. My footprints are there, digging into the muddy surface. I know I didn't imagine what just happened. Chapter 21. I walk straight through the hospital entrance and take the stairs two at a time. All the while, I'm starting to doubt what just happened. That swan can't really have been following me. Swans just aren't that interested in humans. Perhaps I've gone mad. Perhaps it's because I'm stressed. I remember some TV programme Mum was interested in, where they were talking about how stress affected behaviour. The people who were interviewed did all sorts of strange things. Some of them had even hallucinated whole conversations with imaginary people. Perhaps that's what I've done. I've imagined the swan following me. Or at least, imagined the way she was looking at me. But it felt so real. I need to talk to Dad. I know he'll be able to explain it. Maybe that kind of thing has happened to him before. Maybe it's just what swans do, sometimes. Visiting hours are over, but I go to Dad's ward anyway. The nurse at the entrance desk takes one look at me and shakes her head.
You've got mud on your shoes,
she says with a thick Scottish accent. It's difficult to understand what she means straight away. I look down. All the way behind me there's a trail of marks on the shiny floor. But I need to tell him something, I say, my thoughts still full of the swan. It's important. I keep the feathers grasped tight in my pocket. If the nurse is unhappy about the mud, she probably won't like them much either. She scrunches up her face into that sympathetic look I've seen a lot recently.
I'm sorry, Hen, but you need to have your mum here with you. We can't let you in without her permission, even if it were visiting hours.
She comes around the desk and stands close to me. I think she can see how worked up I am.
Tell you what, she says softly. Why don't we go and look at your dad together, from the doorway?
Her voice goes up in pitch, making it sound as if she's talking to a 5-year-old. It's not what I want, watching Dad from the doorway with a nurse's hand on my arm. I want to go right up to him and give him the feathers. I want to hug him and ask him about the swan. But what else can I do? The nurse leads me to the entrance of the ward. She stands behind me, her hands on my shoulders. I feel like a suspect in a cop show. It's as if she's about to march me off to the police station. The curtains are open around Dad's bed, but I can't see him properly. Not from here. Not even when I stand on tiptoes. I think he's asleep. He's very still. So still it doesn't look like he's breathing. I feel my heartbeat speed up. I'm being paranoid. There'd be beeping and alarms and nurses running to him if he stopped breathing. I take a step away. I don't want to imagine it.
See, Hen, he's fine, the nurse coos. No problems at all.
No, what did you want to tell him? I shake her off and make for the door. She's calling something else out to me, something about trying to find my mum, but I deliberately block it out. I hate this. I hate all these other people being responsible for Dad, controlling when I can see him and what I can say to him. I know it's not how he'd want it. The door to coronary care thuds shut behind me. Already I'm walking down the corridor. I'm going to see Harry. My feet know it before my brain's clicked in. He's the only one who might be glad to see me. The only other person who might have seen what happened in the reserve. Chapter 22. My shoes make little squelchy noises as I hurry down the corridor. At the door to the children's cancer ward, I hesitate. It's locked shut. I lean up against it and peer through the glass section. Then the door clicks open and I fall through. There's a nurse on the ward desk smiling at me. I think she's the one I saw last time. "Here to see Harry?" she asks. "But is he... am I allowed?" She nods. There's something tired about her expression, but I think she's trying to be friendly.
"If it's all right with Harry, it's all right with me," she says.
She leads me down the corridor. It doesn't feel as busy in here today. There's less noise and fewer people. Not so many visitors. Harry's door is shut. The nurse knocks it gently, opens it an inch, and looks in.
"Isla's here," she says.
"You up for it?" I hang back. I can't hear him reply. What if Harry is really sick? What if he doesn't want to see me? I feel my stomach tighten as I wait. The nurse turns back to me, gives me a wink.
"Don't stay too long, pet."
She holds the door open for me to go through. Harry's in bed, propped upright with pillows. He grins when he sees me, beckons me in, but I could be looking at a different boy to the one I remember. Today there are dark, dark circles around his eyes, and his skin is even whiter. There are a few strands of hair on his pillows. He reminds me of some sort of furry creature, something that would live underground. I half expect him to scurry away, bury back under the covers.
"Take a seat," he says. "I didn't think you'd come back to visit."
There's a questioning look in his eyes. "Do you want me to go?"
"No way."
He shakes his head as if I've said the most ridiculous thing.
"You've just missed my mum, actually. Could have been quite a party."
I move to the chair beside his bed. He looks exhausted, as though he's run a marathon. I try not to scrape the chair when I sit down. I don't want to be too loud. Suddenly, what happened at the reserve doesn't seem so important. Not when Harry looks as ill as this. What happened to you? I ask.
It's just the chemo. My body doesn't like it too much.
I find it hard to believe chemotherapy could make that much difference to someone, and so quickly. He was so casual about it before. But I start nodding as if I understand, then have to look away quickly as he catches my eye. Does it hurt? I say. Harry thinks for a moment.
I'm not in pain, like how I guess your dad is, but it's just kind of uncomfortable. Everything aches.
His hand flies to his chest, and he presses at something through his pyjama top. At first, I think it's his heart. Are you okay? He brushes away my concern.
Just my Hickman line.
Again, I don't understand. I chew on my lip. It's as if he's living in a different world to me, knowing about a whole bunch of different things. I'm suddenly too shy to say anything. Whatever I say now is going to sound all wrong. So I look out of the window. The lake looks like a blur of colour, and I can't see the swan.
I've been watching you, you know, he says quietly, out there on the lake.
He turns back to me, his pupils smaller from looking at the light.
Do you mind?
I find myself nodding. Yeah, I was...
What?
I was actually kind of hoping you were. We stare at each other. I feel like I've said too much. I should be looking away now, but I can't somehow. It's weird. A little like the pull I felt when I was watching the swan. Harry doesn't look away either. His eyes are bright and shining, as if there are bonfires burning inside them.
What was going on down there? He asks. When you ran around the lake, did you have food with you or something?
I didn't have food.
Then why was she following you?
You saw it. Really? My face gets hot. Even my ears go warm. I'm scared of saying any more. I can't just blurt out how the swan looked at me really intensely, then ran after me across the water. I'd sound like a head case. So I drag my eyes from his and look down at the floor. I wait for Harry to laugh it off, to say something about me being a crazy twitcher, to say exactly what I'm thinking myself, that all of this is in my imagination. But he's suddenly leaning towards me.
You were on the path, and she was on the water, he says quietly. Her wings were flapping, but...
She didn't fly, I know. I look at him carefully, check that he's not just making fun of me, but he's not smiling at all now.
That's pretty weird, isn't it? He says. For a swan to do that?
Wild swans should be scared of humans, I say. She wasn't scared of me at all.
Was she trying to attack you?
I don't think so. Swans aren't like that, and I wasn't threatening her. I don't tell him how, for a moment, it felt like the swan wanted me to go faster. But I want to. I want someone else to understand that there's something different about her, that it isn't just stress that made me think it happened. A thought pops into my head. Why don't you come with me? I say. To the lake. You can see this one properly then. Immediately I wish I hadn't said it. Harry is obviously too sick. He frowns as he thinks, as if he's trying to find exactly the right words.
I haven't been outside for ages, he says quietly.
He stops and looks down at the bed, suddenly awkward. Sorry, I say. I didn't mean to ask you if you're too sick. He shakes his head.
I could go, maybe, if I got permission from the nurses.
He hesitates, still looking at the bed.
I'm just not sure.
I swallow, thinking. Perhaps he just doesn't want to go down there with me. But if he could see that swan, just once, I know he'd understand. I touch the feathers in my pocket. I don't have to come with you, I say quickly. You could go with a nurse or your mum or...
I want to, he says softly.
He finds a stain on the bedsheet and scratches at it.
It's just... It's a hard place to get away from quickly. Do you get me?
I frown. He's trying to tell me something, without actually saying it. But I think I understand. Up here, in his cancer ward, there are nurses and painkillers and Hickman lines. Safe things. Things that he's used to. Down there, on the reserve, it's different. You think it'll make you sicker going there? He folds his hands in his lap.
I'd just rather watch from the window.
His voice sounds shaky and quiet. It makes me wonder. Maybe he's scared. Maybe he spent so long in bed feeling tired that he's forgotten what it's like to do normal things like walk to a lake. Suddenly, I don't know what to talk about. I want to tell him more about the swan and how it felt to run with the wind behind me. I want to show him the photos on my phone, but it seems stupid now. Harry shifts in his bed.
But you'll go down there again, though, won't you?
He asks. I glance up at him, surprised. Why would you want me to?
You have to find out about the swan, why she's following you.
He shrugs, looks away.
Anyway, I don't have much else to do up here. Not until my transplant.
I hold his gaze. Transplant? What do you mean?
It's where they kill off all the stuff inside my bones and give me someone else's instead.
Stuff inside your bones?
Yeah, you know, bone marrow. It seems mine's pretty diseased.
He half smiles at my expression.
Anyway, they'll stick someone else's in me and hope my body accepts it.
When's that going to happen? He runs his fingers through his hair, pulling a few strands out.
Dunno, really. A couple of weeks? A month? Whenever they find a match for me. It's why I'm in here. What I'm waiting for.
He grins quickly.
And until then, I need something to do. So you running around the reserve...
He blushes really badly, and all the paleness in his skin disappears for a moment. It's kind of cute. I start laughing as I get my head around what I think he's trying to say. You want to watch me? You want me to run around the lake like I'm your own private TV show? The shocked look in his eyes makes me laugh more. You're as nuts as that swan is, I say. And suddenly, he's laughing too. Chapter 23 I race down to the cafe. Mum's got a half-eaten cheese sandwich in front of her. Sorry, I say. She raises an eyebrow.
Who is this Harry anyway? She says. It must be nice if he keeps me waiting 20 minutes.
She's looking at me carefully, wondering just how much Harry means to me. But I can't answer her. I don't even know that myself. He's got leukemia, I say. I think he's lonely. She's happy with that. It makes sense. Harry is lonely. Perhaps it's the only reason he wants to be friends with me, so he can watch me run around the reserve and not be bored. As we drive home, Mum tells me the latest on Dad.
The bits that lead into his heart, his valves, aren't working properly, she says. The specialist wants him to have an operation.
That sounds serious.
It's a major op. They have to replace a part of his heart.
But that means it will work better, doesn't it?
Hopefully, if his body accepts it.
Mum looks both ways as she pulls out onto the ring road.
They're replacing one of his valves with a pig's valve.
A pig? Really? Mum smiles slightly.
It sounds a bit odd, doesn't it? Apparently some parts of a human heart are really similar to a pig's.
So Dad's going to be part pig, part human, half animal. I frown as I try to understand it. Mum looks at me and her smile widens.
You could look at it like that, I suppose.
I lean back against the headrest and imagine Dad turning into a pig, developing trotters instead of hands. It's a shame it's not a bird, really, I say.
Mum nods. Tell me about it. A bird's heart would suit him fine. He'd probably even look forward to the operation then.
I tilt my gaze to the grey sky. I can almost imagine Dad up there now, circling beneath the clouds and holding his arms out like wings, half man, half bird. Mum's right. Dad probably would jump at the chance to be like that. I reach into my pocket and touch the swan feathers I took from the lake. I wonder if Dad will look any better next time I see him, and I'm able to give them to him. I watch the fields speeding past the window. Soon they start merging into the factories and car yards outside town, the green, soft-looking ground changing to grey. I sit up to look down Grandad's lane. "Do you think Grandad's worried?" I ask.
"About Dad?"
"Yeah."
"I suppose so, in his way. He's not very good at showing it, though."
I remember how Grandad seemed so hesitant when we stayed at his house, how he'd not really spoken to us at all. Then I noticed the shadows flickering across the fields. I look up. There are swans in the sky. A whole flock. I wind down the window, lean my head out to see better. The cold air hits me at full force.
"Isla!"
Mum squeals. "It's freezing!" "But there are swans up there!" I watch the way they are spaced out, flying in that V-shape. There's enough of them to be whoopers. They're honking and trumpeting, and keeping pace with the car, flying in the same direction. "You should follow them," I say. "Then we can tell Dad we know where they're roosting." The birds veer across the fields to the left of us. I scan the land, try to work out where they're heading.
"They're going back to the farms,"
Mum says.
"We can't follow them. We'll be late for Jack."
She leans over the steering wheel to look up at them, and the car wobbles for a second.
"They make it look so easy," she says. "But when you see them on the ground, they look clumsy, too big to fly like that."
"Yeah, they transform. That's why Dad likes them." Mum laughs suddenly.
"The first date your dad ever took me on was to watch those blasted birds. He made me get up really early for it, too. He said it would be magical."
"It must have worked," I say. "You're still with him." Mum's smile freezes then, and for a moment I think she's going to cry. Then she looks quickly in her side mirror and indicates to overtake. We're both quiet. I watch the swans until they get too far away to see properly. Their feathers glint when the sunlight hits them, and they do look magical for a moment. I wonder what they see from up there, what they think of all the roads and buildings. Do they notice our red car travelling beneath them? I close the window and look through the windscreen. It starts raining. I turn on the radio to the talkie station I know Mum likes. I listen to the drum of drops on the roof and remember the sound of the swan's feet as she ran around the lake beside me. The traffic becomes busier as we edge into town, and Mum sighs as we reach a new set of roadworks. I shut my eyes against the vivid brake lights of the car in front. I wonder if the lone swan on the lake is part of the flock we just saw. Perhaps they're heading back to pick her up. Perhaps she's running across the lake right now, taking off with them. I breathe out slowly. A small part of me doesn't want that swan to leave.
Chapter 24. Dreams come easily that night. I'm down at the edge of the lake, wearing only my thin nightie. I'm looking at the grey swan. My eyes are locked with hers and I can't look away. She comes towards me. Her eyes are unblinking. It's as if she wants something, needs something almost. If I don't give it to her, she's going to tear it right out of my chest. I turn, try to run, but I can't. My feet are stuck deep in the mud. The swan gets to the bank. Her wide webbed feet don't sink into the gooey earth like mine do. I try to pull myself free. The swan stretches her beak towards me. She pecks my thigh. My skin goes colder immediately, and a pain spreads out from the muscle. I grab at my skin, try to stop the throbbing. I pull up my nightie to look. The skin swells, as if there's a blood blister forming beneath the surface. It's agonizing for a second, then fades to a tingling. She goes around to my other leg and pecks there too. I scream, fall backwards. My head thuds against something, then sinks into the mud. She pecks my stomach next, my shoulders. Each time there's a stab of pain. Then it settles. I watch where she pecks. The blood blisters are swelling, and my skin is moving, opening up. Something is sprouting. Small grey feathers are appearing, pushing through the surface. They're all over me.
My skin is becoming covered in a swan-like down. She hisses. She runs her beak over my arms, pushing them out wide across the ground. There's no point resisting. Her touch sends shivers down my spine. I turn my head, look at her small, dark eyes. I suddenly understand what she's doing. The swan is transforming me. She wants me to be part of her flock.